It will be a very simple kind of life and it will eventually be drawn down to the physical plane. Only an experienced student of the subtler sides of esotericism could get any understanding of this form of life. Something approaching a new type of elemental is as adequate a description as any. It should eventually have a connection with a divine spark of a much more limited range than the divine sparks of the human beings. The subject is a very difficult one to put in words, even for approximate ideas. It is in any case very remote but has interest. 7. The life swarms. 4-7 are the common origin of all humanity. In their passage down the planes they have created the great archetypes of humanity and the basic human instincts. They represent a great group soul, a collective state from which individual man has gradually emerged. They have made that aspect of the universal laws which are portrayed in the God forms. Not until these laws had become established did man begin to emerge from this group state, his emergence corresponding with the acquisition by the planetary beings of their full complement of bodies, 7 in all. It is this group state in man that forms the collective unconscious of mankind, the archetypes of which on the evolutionary arc, as distinct from the involutionary, man first contacts in dream and vision. Racial division, therefore, came after this group state, emergence from which was the beginning of separateness. Community life in its highest sense remains a worthy ideal, for its principles seek to replace separateness with cooperation. These swarms gradually built what might be called the immediately pre-human shape. Even at the time of the fourth swarm it was still very embryonic. They are of especial interest since on the manner of progression of the swarms is based the beginnings of what are known as the root race types. In these pre-human stages is to be found much of the history of man, while the gradual formation and development of the archetypes might be called planetary embryology. The human shape as we know it was established by the middle period of the seventh swarm, and the archetypal forms were due in a sense to the projected concept of the planetary being itself, which brings through additional concepts of another type than the logoidal concepts, though not necessarily conflicting with those concepts. 8. The three activities referred to in Chapter 3 as movement, light and sound may be aligned with the three supernal sephiroth of the Tree of Life. The numbers assigned to the sephiroth are connected with the numbers of the corresponding atoms, that is of the facets. F6 are example the terrible simplicity of the three-sided atom, and the use of three in binary symbols are obviously related. The four threes of the tarot cards have the same basis. Both the Tree of Life and the tarot will be found to be in line with the tenets of the cosmic doctrine if the seeker meditates seriously on the subjects. 9. The divine sparks and the great entity that is the logos of our system have a common origin in their prime, cosmic, atoms which derive from the great unmanifest. These prime atoms of a divine spark before that spark comes under the logoidal influence can be called the seed atoms. This seed atom refers to the cosmos, and its difference from the seed atom mentioned at the end of chapter 12 is plain. There is a continuity of development from the prime atom formed as described in the early chapters to the divine spark in each one of us. Just as the great entity has evolved from the ten-sided, or traveling, atom of the cosmos, which itself evolved from the prime atom, so have the divine sparks evolved from certain of the less complex atoms brought into the wake of the traveling atom, or great entity, out of whose concepts the great entity has created and projected its universe. The difference at this point between a great entity and a divine spark is one of degree but not one of kind, for the great entity has experience of all the rays but the divine spark has experience of only one ray. Both have experience of all the planes. Certain of the atoms brought over from the cosmos to the universe by the work of the great entity became the traveling atoms of the universe. They are not as complex as the great entity but are too complex to settle down upon a plane of manifestation, and they return to the center. These atoms brought over by the great entity, which become the divine sparks, are those which in their journeying to the center have their track in space impressed with the logoidal image and influence. Thereafter these divine sparks became conditioned by the logoidal consciousness until the cycle is completed, and they became freed from this influence and returned to their original nucleus of being as seed atoms. There are, therefore, two ways of considering the divine spark. You may look at it from the point of view of the cosmos or from the point of view of solar logoidal evolution, but, in reality the divine spark is one thing having its origin in the unmanifest from which it derives its existence and energy. The divine spark does not derive from the solar logos but is conditioned by the evolution of the solar logos until the cycle of its solar development is completed. This takes place when the individuality, as a result of certain evolutionary processes in the solar logoidal jurisdiction, comes to the point where it need no longer stay in that jurisdiction but is able to recognize its own true being. At that point it is as though the outer development of the divine spark drops away from it and it becomes again purely a seed atom to which the individuality thenceforward owes its allegiance. Thus at that stage the divine spark, being freed from the limiting influences of solar evolution, gives rise to that state of perfect freedom within the individuality, the state of spaceless and timeless existence consciousness. The great responsibility that then devolves upon the individuality on the right-hand path comes from that individuality's now established contact with pure and limitless energy. The individuality is conditioned only by its degree of realization of this contact as it enters on a phase of creative activity, in very truth a God. Advanced initiations are concerned with the degrees of contact of the individuality with the inner aspect of the divine spark, the seed atom, and the realizations thereof. The cycle of solar development is governed by the Lords of Karma and it includes the working out of the tracks in space left by the karma when the karma has itself been worked out, for the solar development occurs after the track in space, of the seed atom, has received the logoidal imprint. Thus until the completion of the solar development the individuality is not able to bring through pure power without some of the power being diverted to its own needs. There is, of course, a wide range of gradation between the earlier and later phases but, broadly speaking, the earlier are essentially concerned with the gradual bringing of the individuality, after preliminary work on the personality, into contact with its own true being the seed atom whereas the later are the true creative work of those who have achieved in cooperation with their brethren. The preliminary work on the personality has to be thoroughly carried out before these phases are entered upon. 10. The inanimate atoms and the divine sparks have a common origin in the great unmanifest. They have both been brought over by the great entity which is our solar logos and from the aggregate of their conceptions of their own images the great entity has projected its universe. Everything that has life in the universe derives that life from its own seed atom. It is the aim of the solar evolution to unite eventually the atoms of its universe with their seed atoms in the cosmos. It has been stated that there is a difference of degree but not of kind between the traveling atoms of a universe and that universe's logos. Similarly, there is a difference of degree but not of kind between a traveling atom and an inanimate atom. Only the more evolved of the cosmic atoms brought over by the great entity became traveling atoms in its universe at the beginning of the solar evolution and received the logoidal impress on their tracks in space. These not including the first three swarms which are different relate to the human evolution and among them are differences in degree of development caused by factors inherent in their makeup. The inanimate atoms are less evolved than the traveling atoms and receive the logoidal impress during the solar evolution according to their degree of development because being in and of the solar universe, their concepts having been used to create it, they are continually being bathed in the logoidal influences and slowly absorb them. In this way we get the oversouls of plant and animal life. These oversouls deriving from the inanimate atoms, which are gradually acquiring a logoidal impress. 11. The basic sound of a human being is implicit in the development of a divine spark. The logoidal impress can be more accurately conceived of as a sound vibration than a picture concept. This idea of primal or basic sound was behind the ancient teachings of number and numerical values. Sound implies rhythm and vibration. That aspect of the trinity of the logos known as the love aspect is the part chiefly at work in the imprinting of the impress. The higher teaching of the church is inspired by this. I. The three primary swarms were projected into manifestation each under an impulse from one of the prime aspects of the logos derived from one of the primary rings. These primary swarms are set apart from the succeeding swarms and are of a different degree. The swarms that followed them developed under the influence of the Logos plus the three primary swarms, the Lords of Flame, Form and Mind. They are, therefore, under the influence of the three cosmic rings, as were the three primary swarms, but also, since the Logos reacts to the 12 cosmic rays, these later swarms are characterized by the influence of the rays predominant at the time they received the logoidal impulse to go forth. Therefore, the great phases of evolution between the sending forth of fresh swarms are governed by the influences from the 12 cosmic rays. This has reference to the houses of the cosmic zodiac and to the precession of the equinoxes. Those who energize these phases and typify them are ray exemplars. They stand, so to speak, between the zodiac and the phases and reflect the zodiacal influences, acting in a sense as cosmic mediators. These influences then act upon the planetary beings. I3. There are two of the ancient god forms which can be called easily to mind as being readily alignable with the essential self, most other god forms being representative of particular aspects, cosmic or universal. These two god forms are Horus and Eros. Of them the former could stand for the divine spark, the latter for the seed atom. For all practical purposes we could say they stand for the outer and inner aspects of the seed atom respectively. This supernal Eros is far removed from the popular conception which identifies him with Cupid. He represents here the essence of man, which is Eros plus Anteros and springs from the cosmic egg, like the philosophic concept of that Eros who was one of the earliest of the Greek gods. This cosmogonic Eros was the earliest force bringing order out of chaos, and he presided at the council of the gods and rules over the minds of gods and men. He was one of the gods of the Samothracian mysteries. 14. The star Sirius has always been held in esoteric teaching to have much influence on solar evolution. Astronomically speaking, of course, the position in space of Sirius is far outside the solar system, but from the cosmic standpoint Sirius and many other stars condition the solar logos, and, since the solar logos is itself conditioner of and conditioned by its universe, the influences of Sirius and other stars are transmuted correspondingly before being communicated to the universe. Therefore, in the purely esoteric sense, stars in general and Sirius in particular, because of its special influence, can be considered in relation to solar evolution more, especially those which, like Sirius, have had a marked effect on it. The individual, however, must have completed the cycle of solar development before he can experience the pure influence of Sirius or other stars. 15. Orthodox science studies the materials of which the body of the Earth is made and their composition, but the deeps of the inner Earth, the makeup of the planetary being, is what is most important to esoteric studies. It can be helpful to think of the Earth rather as a planet, a globe in the solar system, than as the world and a development brought about by many civilizations to one of which we now belong. That which sustained and nurtured those civilizations is the planetary being. This tremendous force is sometimes personalized as the Earth Mother, but, personalization or no, all should be aware of the gigantic force involved and of how they are beholden to it. The archangelic guide assigned to the planetary being might be considered to supply higher aspects to it corresponding to the intellectual principle in man. The names of these archangelic guides as known traditionally can be found in standard works of reference such as the mystical Kabbalah. 16. Each planet has within it the principles of a universe, as indeed has the atom, so that the group soul of the planet's life comes through in aspects somewhat analogous to the three aspects of the Logos. There is something of the aspect of love, of wisdom and of power in each planet. Planets have had their leaders who have shown forth certain principles by their conditions of life, even as there have been teachers who did this for the guidance of mankind. These planetary aspects affected certain sections of the human race, for they affected the life swarms as they came down. Thus, according to the aspects prevalent on certain planets which were in contact with man as he then was, so did a particular swarm receive a conditioning. These great stresses of planetary substance have much influence both in their own sphere and on the Earth, because when the Earth was, so to speak, beginning its course in the heavens. Various influences and substances from different planets penetrated the then empty and uncoordinated mass which became the Earth. These stresses have left their mark on the Earth's structure and innermost nature and account sometimes for disturbances of one kind or another, earthquakes. For example, for there is still a link between certain substances in the Earth and the corresponding substance in some other planet, and the two activate each other and reactions are set up in both. That is largely the basis of the more accurate side of astrology. But it is too intricate and too remote for most today to study deeply or use as a basis of assessment. In very early days, the most advanced among the priesthood knew about the stellar and planetary stresses and the Earth's magnetism, and on that knowledge built a system of which, indeed, something remains, though the bases of the system have been forgotten. There are people on the Earth whose psychic faculty can be stirred by such stresses. Some people, for example, are sensitive to earthquakes or atmospheric pressures in a way others are not. Such people have in their inner makeup some of the stresses corresponding to those of the particular planet which is disturbing the Earth. Certain planets influence the water, fire, air and earth conditions of the Earth by acting on the Earth's aura. The underlying principle is that of the unity of all. The Earth is not unique. It should be considered for what it is, one of the bodies in the solar system which has passed through states and conditions which have gradually condensed into what we call the Earth, but which have passed down from the Moon, Venus, Saturn and other planets. The planetary beings can be considered in one way as the group souls of the planets and may be given by the visual imagination a definite form, as indeed in ancient days was done. Out of these planetary beings, as they affected the mind and character of man, were later evolved by vision and imagination into astral forms, the forces known to mythology. There is, therefore, a strong link between planetary beings and the appropriate god forms, as is studied by some even today. At the end of evolutions, planets change over and different planets go into action during the succeeding evolution, so that the subject of astrology at the present day has to contend with difficulties that are practically insurmountable. There is much to be learnt about the life swarms and the way in which their coming down affects humanity generally in the present. All those ancient happenings and developments must be included in any estimation of the condition of man and his development. During the various historical periods, certain planetary forces, for planetary forces is a more accurate description than planets, influenced the Earth, each according to its special nature. When these forces are brought to bear again in their turn, they bring to the surface conditions corresponding to their nature, they bring them about in the Earth. Although we have used the term planetary forces, we include also certain stellar forces working through the solar jurisdiction, such as the signs of the zodiac. But that subject is too vast to be dealt with in detail now. Bear in mind, however, the sign of Gemini, for the forces signified by that sign influenced Atlantis and will influence Earth again later in the present age. The stars are set in configurations somewhat similar to those which influenced the last days of Atlantis. Certain major planetary forces and signs are influencing mankind again, and though the combinations are different, there is something of the same kind of inner condition. The combinations are different, but there is something of a similar inner condition, and the world, though not deluged by a water cataclysm, is full of clashes and strife of various kinds. I7. Let us consider the second swarm, the life wave of those great regents of the Logos we call the Lords of Form. They might also be called the builders, for through them all form, all shape is developed. The shape that covers or encases the life consciousness is made by the builders to hold that life for a time sufficient for the life to react as needed to the stresses of the sphere on which it is, after which the life withdraws to another condition, leaving the form to decompose into the elements of the sphere. This is one of the earliest conceptions of death, so that the Lords of Form are also the gods of death. Where there is death on a large scale, especially death on a group scale as in war, the Lords of Form are intimately concerned, for then the whole planet is, as it were, shaken and its planetary forces need reconstruction. The Lords of Form work with group souls more than with individuals, but where a great teacher is instructing mankind, especially if the teaching concerns human evolution, The lords of form are at work adapting the planetary matter to the new and greater concept of life and evolution being brought through. When the Christ, using the body of Jesus of Nazareth, strongly influenced the planet Earth, there were very definite, though perhaps incalculable, changes in the actual lines of the Earth. These were not observable by science perhaps, but the logoidal forces changed to another course, so to speak, and the inner forces behind the outer manifestation of the Earth, the etheric structure, began to alter. Form is not confined to outline but is essentially the whole shape and fills the need of life for a particular shape. The shape does not appear all at once but grows and develops in the course of evolution, as indeed does the life. The actual outlines or configurations of cosmic form, such as the stars, planets, and large land masses, are all influenced by the lords of form. The ancients were aware of these very early beings, the lords of form, and their powers, recognizing them as great titanic forces much connected with fire and metallic ores, and paying homage to them in some of the earliest mysteries. These lords are behind the great chemical and alchemical fires. They construct shape by means of mingling and uniting the elemental powers and the metallic and mineral forces of the Earth, building structures of every kind, especially planetary structures, for they it was who built the planets. You will notice that the larger and vaster forms are always the simplest, the great spherical forms are the simplest, but smaller types increase in complexity. A comparison of the huge prehistoric animals with the present day fauna will show. The outer structure of a planet is indeed simple. The lords of form may also be called the lords of rhythm, just as the lords of flame may be called the lords of vibration, because of their rhythmical advance and retreat in the building of the universe. That was the beginning of rhythm in the universe, and it set the great rhythms, death and birth. Thus can these lords be called the lords of death, and they are deeply connected with the ring chaos. They have the great driving force of reaction that will finally break up a form and release the force. They are at work behind the construction of mineral forms, for these are after developments of the form of the Earth, and the life of the planet is within the mineral in a certain way. All the ancient legends of the great powers of the underworld, the chthonic forces of hammer and anvil, the hammering into shape of great streams of force, the blacksmith gods, deal with the builders and lesser types of elemental beings concerned with work as servants of the lords of form. In a properly worked ritual, the elemental beings build certain forms on the astral which hold together the stresses of force until other forces take over. Rhythm or repetition is important here, for the frequent building of the forms eventually makes it as near solid as is possible on the astral plane. Just as the efficient and contacted occultist makes use of the service and cooperation of these builders, so, on a much larger scale, did the Logos use the powers of the lords of form to construct not only the Earth but also the other planets of its system. All the solar system is interlinked, and reflections of the attributes of other planets will be seen within certain mineral forms of the Earth. Certain precious stones, for instance, are very closely connected with other planets, and this connection is not based only on superstition. Similarly, certain metals have a composition which links them to certain basic outlines and substances of other planets, giving not only an analogy with them but also a certain definite linking. An imaginative picture of these great lords of form could be made by visualizing a vast amphitheater under the Earth, and darkness filled with red flashes from the depths of inner Earth. Through this darkness can be heard a hammer on an anvil very faintly at first, for it is very remote. Imagine this sound as coming gradually nearer with a tremendous rhythm, hard, strong, simple. As that rhythmic sound increases in intensity, giant forms gradually begin to build in outline, vast forms dimly and only partly seen in outline, for they are too huge and too six strong to be contained in space as we know it. Feel the etheric intensification behind the dimly discerned form. Within this work which is being done by the lords of form is a vast patience which is content to take millions of years over the task it has set itself, so that it can be perfectly done. Every time the great worker returns to a task, he brings a new power derived from the Logos and from the sphere in which he accomplished his last work, and this new power gives a somewhat changed type of force to the work. And ever the great hammer beats and beats and beats through time, building, unbuilding and building again, Such are the great regents of the Logos entrusted with this work. These regents are also the servers of the aspect of the Logos B6 hind death, and regeneration and rebuilding. We can invoke the Lords of Form to help us to earn our freedom from form when the time approaches. He who knows and understands death has already overcome it. He is a pupil of the Lords of Form. We would do well to give a thought to the great builders who have built us and the planetary spheres and who are behind the laws of shape, whether on the astral or physical plane, with whom we can cooperate as agents of the divine. 18. In the mystical Kabbalah there are references to the archangels of the 10 holy Sephiroth. These are the intelligences of the spheres and are of the first swarm Lords of Flame. That intelligence works with the archetypal force of the sphere, and under its control are the angels of the sphere which execute the wishes of the archangels according to their natures. The sphere of Malkuth comprises the mundane plane and the spiritual values which are immediately within dense matter, in fact the spirit of the atom, and it is under the aegis of the Lord of the Four Elements we call Sandalphon. This archangel is one to be invoked by those especially who find difficulty in coming to grips with the physical plane, for it is he who has charge of the soul of physical objects. If you could see with your physical vision the exact inner plane condition of a chair or a table, you would observe a very slow vibration and movement of infinite numbers of tiny molecules holding together the dense matter. Sandalphon is the overlord of all these activities. Those who are so inclined can visualize a great angelic form in the four kabbalistic colors of Malkuth: pale yellow, olive green, russet and black. His vibrationary rate is slow and somewhat ponderous, for it belongs to the plane of dense matter and the connecting link of etheric just behind that plane. The sphere of Yezud concerns, among other things, the deeper and remoter etheric substance, the Akasha as it is sometimes called, and here the archangel is that known as Gabriel, ruler of many subtle realms in nature and in man. He is the lord of dreams and of the subtle vibrations of a rare kind which can touch the clairvoyant faculties of man. In Christianity he is associated with the Annunciation, partly because he is the mystic announcer, the controller of the special kind of message which can reach to the human mind from far off planes. He is, in fact, the angel of Annunciation to many others than Mary. Thus, he is also concerned with sleep, that condition in which the dense body is inactive and the subtle vehicles can escape from it to other planes. It is a large part of his work to induce what is a part of the moon consciousness in man. He tends to draw the soul magnetically, even as a great water power draws, and therefore his influence is a kind of sedative on the physical power. He draws the consciousness from it. He may be pictured as a huge ovoid of silvery substance with the delicate lilac and violet of Yezud in his wings and the sound of mighty waters which show his special type of vibration. The sphere of Tifereth is presided over by the archangel Raphael. He holds the healing and sustaining powers of sunlight, especially is he concerned with the modem methods of radiant heat and infrared and ultraviolet rays, though these are as yet from the esoteric standpoint only in their infancy. Finally, there is the sphere of Kether, whose archangel is Metatron. He is said to have been responsible for the glyph of the Tree of Life's being given to man. He works in the great world of cosmic archetypes, and his influence is very rare. It is of the type that comes as a blinding flash of illumination of remote spiritual truths. Thus far we have dealt with the Sephiroth on the middle pillar of the composite glyph of the Tree of Life and the pillars. Let us now consider the Sephiroth on the two side pillars. The archangel of the sphere of Chokhmah is Raziel. He brought through the creative forces in early evolution. It is difficult to formulate in the human mind such beings as either Metatron, of Kether, or Raziel, for they are beyond form as we know it and are incapable of being reduced to a symbol in any way adequate, save perhaps that of great pillars of glory with no fixed outlines. The archangel of the sphere of Binat Sapkiel has been behind the formulation of all the mystic cults that have been sent down from time to time by the inner plane adepti. He is the archangel of the temple and can be envisaged as a vast presence shining with a certain living darkness with a rose-colored glow in the center. The archangel of Chsodkiel has a great influence, giving an assurance of benevolence and the utter calm of eternal security and certainty. He could be of great help to any who are prone to irritation or unbalance of temper. The Archangel of Jeborah Carmel is the protector of the weak and wronged. He is also the avenging angel who punishes the breakers of law. The Archangel of Netzarchaniel is the Archangel of the sphere of harmony and beauty, and especially of interrelationships, whether of spheres, planets, plants or animal and human life, the great archetype of sympathetic vibration.